This is HPR episode 1944 entitled, SSHFS, Secure S-Hell File System. It is hosted by 5150 and is about 31 minutes long. The summary is, how to mount remote storage using SSHFS.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Howdy folks, this is 5150 for Hacker Public Radio, and today I'm going to deal with a topic Ken Fallon has been trying to get someone to speak on for years now, and that's SSHFS, the Secure Shell File System. And I've long been a user of SSH, but I haven't, I've declined to do the show because I thought, well, you can't really just start there. You've got to deal with the whole topic of SSH. So I always looked at it as a series of shows and thus never got started on it. Now, fortunately, in the past couple months, other hosts have come on and given us a pretty good foundation in SSH. So I can do the SSHFS as pretty much a standalone show. Now, I'm going to start by reading from the top of the man page for SSHFS, again, which stands for Secure Shell File System. And it says it's a file system for Linux and other operating systems with a FuSE implementation, such as Mac OS X or FreeSB, capable of operating on files on a remote computer using just a secure shell login on the remote computer. On the local computer where the SSHFS is mounted, the implementation makes use of the FuSE, or File System in User Space, kernel module. The practical effect of this is that the end user can seamlessly interact with remote files being securely served over SSH just as if they were local files on his/her computer. On the remote computer, the remote computer, the SFTP subsystem of SSH is used. In short, it's my opinion that SSH offers a dead simple way of mounting remote network volumes from another system on a specified mount point on your local host, with the added benefit of encrypted data communications. It's perfect for ad hoc connections on mobile computers or for more permanent links. This tutorial is going to be about how I use SSHFS. I'm not going to delve into every conceivable argument that can be used with SSHFS, because most of them I haven't used myself, and all I would be doing is essentially reading the man page and probably interpreting it poorly. I think what I do with SSHFS is going to cover the vast majority of use cases, and so we'll just stick to what I'm doing so we don't make things too complicated. There are other ways to mount storage, most notably Samba. But unless you're trying to connect to a Windows share, it's my opinion that SSHFS is far less trouble to set up, especially since most distros come with SSH server already installed. And that's all you need on the remote system. You don't need SSHFS on the remote system. You just need to have SSH server running. And the first thing you need to do when preparing to use SSHFS is to create a mount point on your local computer. For most purposes, I recommend that this would be a folder inside your home folder. You should plan to always leave this folder empty because SSHFS won't mount inside a folder that already has files in it. So all you should be using this folder for is as the SSHFS mount point. Now, maybe if I had a machine that had multiple users, instead of setting up SSHFS mounts under each user's home directory, let's say you have a home server and you have shared video files or something, home videos, photographs, whatever, and that's what you're using your server for, and you want everybody to have access to that, and you have one machine with multiple logins and multiple users. So instead of doing this, having each user mounting SSHFS into their home folder, perhaps you'd want to do a common folder someplace, and then so that would show up in the home folder. You could use a symlinks in every user's home folder, so that it would appear that this common folder somewhere on the computer was in every user's home folder. I think it's probably just as easy to use SSHFS for each user, because they're not all going to be, I wouldn't say can't possibly. For most people's use cases, only one user is going to be logged into one machine at once. That's just because the way modern PCs are built. While Linux and Unix are multiple user operating systems, we tend to use them at home at least one user at a time. And I'm making this far more complex than I had intended. So let's go on to the next topic. SSHFS, the command syntax reminds me a lot of the other extended commands based on SSH, like SCP. So the basic format is the command SSHFS space your username on the remote computer at IP address of the remote computer. And of course, if you've got the host name for that computer set up somewhere, to set up somewhere to resolve to an IP, you could use, of course, a host name. Now, this is very important. After the IP or the host name, you have to include right after that needs to be a colon. And you look at my example in the show notes, and I'm going to explain that in a minute. And then space, and then the mount point on your local computer. So /home/your username/ the folder you created to use as a mount point. Okay, now some people are going to need more than just the basic options. I know that I do, so let's cover those. Okay, well, I'm going to give a real-world example for my system. My home server is on 192.168.2.153. I mentioned again, you could use a host name instead of the IP. But for the sake of the argument, let's say my mount point for network storage is /home/50/storage. So then I would mount storage on my server in my home directory by issuing SSHFS space 50 at 192.168.2.153 colon space /home/50/storage. Now, of course, you could always use a relative path to the mount point. If you're in your home folder, then of course you could just use storage. You wouldn't have to do the explicit path from the root. I prefer to do it that way. Use an explicit path, but you certainly don't have to. And then your whole home directory on your remote system will be mounted, will appear to be in that folder. So in other words, what appears on my server to be /home/50, every file in there on my laptop shows up in /home/50/storage. Now, let's say you don't want to mount your whole remote folder. In the case of my server, or your remote home folder, in the case of my server, I have a folder called storage under my home folder. So I'm using the same folder name on both machines. But if I mount storage under storage on my home server, then on my workstation, on the workstation, the folder looks like looks like /home/50/storage/storage. So wouldn't it be easier if I could mount, if I could just go directly into that storage folder? Because I have no reason to mess with the configuration files and all that on the server. If I want to, in my home folder on the server, if I want to get into that, I can SSH into the server and manipulate those on the server rather than trying to manipulate them as mounted files. But the I'll get to the but in a minute. So, you know, let's say again, I'd probably clear this up some. All your shared storage is in a folder that's underneath your home folder on your server. And that's all you want to share, is your shared storage. I mean shared in my case, not between other people, but between other computers. I've got laptops that only have 500 gig. I've got, Raspberry Pis. Some of them aren't running with external storage. And so, for one thing, to make a shared place to transfer files from one to the other. That's a good use for a shared server. And the other thing is archive files, ISOs, podcasts, videos or whatever that I may have downloaded. And I want to be able to see these on each of my computers. So instead of when I say, well, I'd like to download that YouTube video and look at it later, instead of downloading it to my laptop's hard drive, which again is only 500 gig, I download it to the 5 terabyte storage on the server. And then it's available to any workstation on my network. So, like I said, I've got all that stuff, the archives, things I want to share, things not to do with the operation of the server or of my account on the server. That's in a subfolder of my home directory on the server. So the easy way to mount that is I can, in other words, if I don't want to deal with all that stuff in my home folder, I just want to deal in the subfolder under my home folder, and that's what I want to share. I can modify the command to be sshfs space 50@192.168.2.153:storage /home/50/storage. So in other words, whatever you put after the colon, SSHFS is assuming you're starting in whatever username that you gave it, you're starting in their home folder. And you say, well, I don't want to have, you know, I don't want to mount everything in my home folder. I just want to mount this subdirectory that's in my home folder that has all the stuff that I want to share between all my computers. Well, that's how you do it. You put in the name of that subdirectory after the colon. But in any case, the colon's always got to be there, whether you've got a subdirectory behind it or not. And of course, you could go down several subdirectories if that's what you wanted to do. And you could also do it, you could do it explicit. You could do the colon and then /home/50/storage. I don't think you could do like colon/ and dump yourself into the root directory. I don't know. I guess I've never tried that. You might be able to walk around the root directory, but unless your user has root access. You wouldn't be able to modify anything, certainly. But now we come to the rub on my situation. Since my server is a Raspberry Pi and the 5 terabyte shared storage for the network, essentially a NAS, it's an external 5 terabyte hard drive. Now it auto mounts under media automatically just by being plugged in during boot up. But I want to have that, you know, I need to have that mounted in my home folder so I could access it with the SSHFS, the home folder on the server. So I use a symlink to symlink that subdirectory that's under /media into my home folder. Now, apparently, a lot of distributions do not like to, using SSHFS, go directly into a symlink. Now, I was able to do it with my Debian, and I thought I'd been able to do it with other distros before, but I haven't been able to do that in Ubuntu, and I haven't been able to do it with OpenSUSE. If I try to go in straight down to the storage folder, it gives me an error. If I go into the my home folder, no problem, and then I can work my way down to the storage folder. Now, okay, this is another thing that's very important that you need to remember. If you have any symlinks, and you probably should just start out assuming, even if you don't have symlinks on your server now, that sometime you might, you need to append the option -O space follow _ symlinks to your SSHFS command. Because if you don't do that, it's the symlinks are not, you're not going to be able symlinks are not going to be recognized as folders, and you're not going to be able to navigate into them. Now, the -O follow symlinks comes at the end of the command, which is also unusual. We're used to arguments in Linux commands directly following the command itself and before the parameters. In other words, the server you're mounting to and the mount point. We would usually expect an argument to come first. In this case, it goes at the end. There's other arguments which I'm about to get to for SSHFS that do come directly after the command. One I think is probably most pertinent is -P for ports. Let's say you're not doing this on your local network. Let's say you actually want to mount storage from a server located out on the internet. Well, you can do that, but probably as we found out with Ahuku's episode, if there's a server out there on the internet with an open SSH port, if the administrator knows anything about what they're doing, that's not on default port 22, it's on something else. So that's where your -P comes in. So, and that, let's say the server, theoretical server out on the internet, it's got SSH running on port 1022. Then your command would look more like SSHFS space -p space 1022 space username at IP address colon subfolder if there is one, space local mount point space -o, also lowercase o, space follow _symlinks. And reading through the man page, the only other thing that I think the average user might want need, there's also a -o space allow _root, which I would expect would mean that you could log in direct rather than logging into a user's, or I'm sorry, rather than mounting a user's home folder, you would mount all the storage on the machine directly from root. I assume you'd also have to be logging in as root user to do this. I really would not recommend any of that, but obviously it is an option. As I do know where this is I happen to know that in general, if you SSH into a machine as root, you're not going to be at, this is hard to explain. You're not going to be at slash, the top level root. You're going to be literally in slash root. And that's sort of the home directory for the root user. It's not in with the regular home directories. And the reason I know that, years ago, I bought a Chumby clone, different brand, but sort of the same, setup. I think they were related somehow. Running all the little apps, and I found out, really, I couldn't find any of the little apps, user made or otherwise, that were available that was anything that was interesting to me. It's supposed to be like a digital alarm clock. I guess it could be digital, but a smart alarm clock. So I just plugged in a external hard drive to it and used as a server. But the 3 or 4 years I used it, I never did find. I could create regular users, but it never would. I don't know why it never would allow me to SSH into the box as anything but root. So that's how I knew you wind up in slash root if you log in as root, and I don't think there's no subfolders under that, so I don't think you'd be able to really go anywhere if you mounted slash root. The Chumby got me into trouble, really. I'm sure you. A lot of you folks listening to this probably hang out in the Freenode channel, Ogcast Planet. And the first day I had it, I was on Android application, I think AnChat in IRC, and because I was eating in a restaurant, and proudly told everybody that I'd spent the previous evening playing with my 8-inch Chumby. Spell check kind of bit me on that, so everybody thought I was being rude. So that's an interesting story that probably should make this episode explicit. Okay. Also, at this point, I could explain to you how to modify your slash etsy slash fstab to automatically mount an SSHFS partition, but I'm not going to do that because pretty much universally storage is mounted before the network is up and running. So, anything modifications you made to the etsy fstab would be ignored or maybe even cause a crash because there's no network out there for the remote file to be mounted on. Now, of course, if you really wanted to do it that way, you could modify the order in which systems are loaded in Linux so that the network would be up and running by the time slash etsy slash fstab was processed. I just think it's a whole lot easier if you want to automatically connect to the server or mount the server. Just put whatever part of the commands we've been talking about that are appropriate for your situation into a shell script and have that shell script be mounted automatically at some point after log on. Another thing we want to look out for, let's say, sometimes you'll mount the remote partition or the remote storage and for an unknown reason the network connection will break. And you don't notice that, or maybe you reboot the computer and you forget to run your shell script to mount the remote storage. Let's say you go into a browser like Firefox and you click on a link to download, and it just happens that you're satisfied with the download folder on, I mean, let's say your last download was to a point on the server on the FSHFS shared storage, and so you're going to store it right in the same place, so you just click on save. Well, it's not going to check that the server's mounted, because that's transparent to the browser. It doesn't know that that's a remote storage mount point. So it's going to go in your mount point in your home directory and say maybe that was several subfolders down on the server. It's going to create all those folders and then that one lone file. Or maybe if you selected several files to download. And then you'll look and see, well, my server's not mounted, but I've got, it looks like all those folders are in there. But assuming your directory structure branches at some point, it's going to be awful obvious. Oh, yeah, it's only stored this one path, and at the bottom of that path, there's this file I downloaded. So that's easy to fix. So you don't have to download it. You copy that file somewhere else on your local hard drive. Then you go to your mount point in your home folder, and you just delete all those junk folders that were created. Then you reestablish your mount to the server, and when you get all that done, go back wherever you copied that file to, and then move it over to the server. And it's fairly simple, but it's something to watch out for. Okay. Skipped over one thing. See, the other day, you know, I told you about the option, the -O, follow symlinks. So that's something I have to put on every time. I'd set up this other computer to actually process or help me process some of the audio files from the New Year's Eve show, so I could run Audacity on more than one computer. And all those files were saved to storage on the server. And like a big dummy, I forgot the -O follow symlink. So yeah, I mounted the server, but the subfolder that I needed to access wasn't there because I didn't put in follow symlinks. So rather than rebooting the local computer, which would have taken care of it, because the command you need to unmount an SSHFS remote volume is fuser mount space -, lowercase u space and then the mount point, you know, path to wherever that mount point is, and then you look at that mount point, it'll be a pristine empty directory again, and then you can go back and remount your network storage, and this time remember to put in -O space follow _ symlinks, and you'll be back in business. Okay. I have been asked in this last week when I'm going to do another 5150 Shades of Beer. And my answer is it's probably going to be a little while because I still have all those conference interviews and topics from last year. I still have tech stuff I want to do, and I just don't want to take away from getting some of those more serious shows out. Just to talk about beer. But as I have been wont to do recently, I am reviewing one beer tonight along with the technical topic. Our beer for tonight, and I apologize to this brewery because I'm going to butcher the name. Wien Stefhanner, I guess. That's pretty close, and the particular beer is their Vitus, and is described on the bottle as a Weizenbock. So what does that mean? Well, you should remember from previous episodes, Weizen, wheat. Bock is a strong lager. So this is a strong wheat lager. And it's 7.7 alcohol by volume, so yeah, that's not bad on that scale. And the main thing that about this beer that I notice is the carbonation. Very, very effervescent. Probably not going to be able to pour the whole bottle into a glass until you wait for the head to subside a little bit. Pours with a lot of head for a high ABV beer. So I imagine they're doing something in their process to intentionally increase the carbonation. I think they describe it as a fairly yeasty beer. So that would explain a lot of it. It's pours sort of a cloudy amber, but there's no, dead loose yeast floating around like you will see with some craft beers. So all the yeast is consumed, or at least they filter it out before they put it in the bottle. Aroma, definitely some aroma of banana. I cheated. I looked at the website to see their description. I could probably be pushed to say that I smell some apricot in there, maybe. But as far as flavor, definitely, you're drinking a wheat beer, and it's a little on the fruity sweet side. Certainly not cloyingly, but it's only 17 international bitterness units, so not a very hoppy beer by any means. It's a quite pleasant beer. It's, like I said, I'm not that appreciative of beers that I have to hunt around and try to figure out what that, the taste. It's not a very boldly flavored beer, and the main attribute seems to be the carbonation. So I'm not, certainly an enjoyable beer, but probably one that I'm not going to seek out again in the future. Okay. Well, I've been 5150, your host this evening for Hacker Public Radio. We're getting kind of short on shows. I think that may change once we get the hit with the New Year's Eve stuff, but still, we're kind of in a slump right now. Would appreciate you folks sending in some shows. And with that, I'll sign off for this evening. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.